Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, it's springtime, and that means it's time for a little bit of spring cleaning, doesn't it, lads? The winter bush needs to go, or at least be trimmed down. And that's why we're going with the king of below-the-waist grooming, Manscaped. Starting with the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. That's power right there. Man power. I mean, it does work on women as well. It doesn't discriminate. It's a fifth generation trimmer that features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads. A standard one for taking a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. It's got an LED spotlight to help you see everything you need. And if you're worried about making a mess, don't worry. It's waterproof. You can do it in the shower. It says you can also go to the ocean. I wouldn't recommend just sort of getting everything out in public though. Although nude beaches, people do love them. Especially old people. They just get to an age where they're like, let it all hang out. And it comes with a compact case, which means you can take it anywhere you go. And spring cleaning doesn't just apply to below the waist, it also applies to your face. And you can get the full grooming experience with the Beard Hedger Pro Kit and the Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Whether you're looking to craft your signature look or to clean up the neckline, these are always the right tools for the job. And the best bit is you can get 20% off and free shipping when you use my code TRUE, that's T-R-U-E, all block capitals, at checkout at manscaped.com. So big love to Manscaped for powering the channel and looking after the boys, but for now, enjoy the video. I really appreciate your time.
No, I actually appreciate you. Remember, man, I watch a lot of the media stuff on boxing, MMA, all of that. You know, you're one of the guys who were impartial and fair with your assessment toward Francis Ngannou. From way back then, when everyone was banishing him, you gave him the benefit of the doubt. So I just want to say thank you. I'm very gracious to you, and I appreciate being on your podcast for the first time. Hey, it's better late than never, my brother. Man. So it's an honor to be here.
Thank you so much, man. Honestly, it means a lot. I mean, I've got so much admiration and respect for Francis and what you and him have done together. You've shook up the world, in the words of Muhammad Ali, right? Like, and let's just start back there, Dewey, if we can, mate, to actually let me introduce you properly. This is the trainer, the coach of Francis Ngannou, ladies and gentlemen, right? And a man who's been coaching for a long time, right, Dewey? You've obviously trained an MMA coach in kickboxing and boxing.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You had a great career yourself, by the way. I looked your record up. I was very impressed with your highlights, man. You've got some sick highlights, by the way.
Thank you. And, you know, everyone don't realize I was a cruiserweight. But in kickboxing, you know, the money wasn't that great. So that's why I went to heavyweight. That's why I gave up 60 pounds against Gary Goodrich. Yeah. That's why I gave up 81 pounds against Mighty Mo. People don't realize I was the first guy to beat Mighty Mo in a crazy fight.
I heard about Gary Goodrich as well. Like, he was serious.
Yeah. That fight's on the Glory page right now, the website. If you go see that. See the fight. Everyone will tell you, once you watch the fight, you'll see what happened. But I've had a long career. I also got 25 professional boxing fights that people don't realize. I've also trained 4 different fighters and won world titles in boxing with 4 different champions. Jessica Roccozzi was my first. Babu Shuinoff was my second. Jesse Vargas was my third. And Jamie Miracle Mitchell, we went to Liverpool in 2022 and took Shannon Courtney, the Liverpool's champion. She was a WBA bantamweight world champion. We went there in her hometown and took her belt from her just recently. So I've done a lot in boxing. People just think of some MMA guy. MMA was the last thing that I did. So, but it's saying that it's not just me who has helped Francis achieve this. It's myself and the assistant coach, John Mumba. I got to give him credit. He's part of the team. And, of course, Eric Nixick. Remember, I was with Francis with the old regime, with the French regime. If you watch the Overeem fight, it was Fernand Lopez, Jerome LeBetter, one of my brothers from K1 Kickboxing, and me in Francis's Corner that night when he KO'd LeBetter with the most incredible uppercut ever landed. I've been working with Francis since 2017, guys. I'm not new to this. I'm just finally getting recognized for it. And if I never did, I'm cool with that. As long as Francis is winning and he appreciates us, that's all that matters to me.
You mentioned Alistair Overeem, the fight. It was ironic because, I mean, that was one of the most highlight reel knockouts of all time in MMA. And yet Alistair Overeem, the night, I think it was the night or a few nights before the Fury fight, he said, look, I'm picking Francis to win. You don't realize what it's like being in there with him, you know? And as we know, Francis can knock people out just by touching someone with his fingertips, right? So let's go back to the Fury fight, because obviously that is now looked upon, and rightly so, as the greatest boxing debut of all time. And you masterminded that along with, a few other guys, like you said. Can you explain to me how on earth you game plan with a novice boxer, essentially, for the heavyweight champion of the world?
The most important thing a fighter needs is inner belief and self-confidence. Those two things can move mountains, guys. And who else in the world of fighting ever has more inner belief and self-confidence than Francis Ngannou? That's the reason why you didn't write him off with all these magnanimous challenges. His lifestyle, how he came up are very important factors. Mm-hmm. Digging dirt in elementary school, that's not for everyone. And being 26 years old and deciding, man, I got to do something different with my life, and actually achieving it is almost impossible at that age, guys. Mm-hmm. That's why I say when it comes to impossible, for Francis, it simply means I'm possible. Him and Tyson had banter back and forth for years. And somehow, God's will, alhamdulillah, it happened. So it's different when a guy screams he wants something, but gets it, and then gets the deer in the headlight syndrome. Oh, shit. No, he got it. He said, let's go. He thought about it. We had a meeting. The team was assembled, the roles, et cetera, and we started training. People forget we had 16 weeks. We had 16 weeks for Tyson Fury, and that's all we needed, man. We trained properly. We put a good game plan together, and more than anything, it wasn't Tyson Fury underestimating him. It was Francis putting up a great performance. You don't underestimate no one. I'm asking you a question before you ask me, sir. You don't underestimate anyone when you have 30 minutes to fight them. If it's a one-round fight, two-round fight, maybe a three-round fight, you can get caught slipping and lose a round or two. In 30 minutes, you got time to kick in your alter ego and get going. So I want to hear about underestimating. He had 30 minutes. The true story was unfolded that night.
Yeah, I can feel the frustration in your voice from hearing that. It's so sad that so many people have downplayed the greatness of Ngannou and just put it down to Fury having an off night. Ironically, you mentioned Conor McGregor before, and look, I think we all respect what Conor did with Floyd Mayweather. However, do you think that kind of played into Ngannou's hands a little bit, because people thought, this is just going to look like Conor McGregor Floyd, and they underestimated the raw power and the magic of Francis coming into the fight?
Absolutely. They thought it was going to be worse because Floyd was past his prime, 40, older guy. Conor was the young, bigger, stronger guy, right? In our case, Francis was the older guy, the inexperienced guy, the smaller guy, and on a 2-year layoff coming from a knee surgery.
Exactly.
So guys, that's what frustrated me about the narrative. By the way, people say there were a lot of close rounds in the fight, right? Any close round, think about this. In a close round, why would you give it to a champion that's done this his entire life versus the guy having his first fight, right? The round shouldn't be close. If it's an even round, you got to give it to the guy having his first fight. So people were just backwards in the way they thought. I felt there were a few close rounds. Francis coming forward, he should get those goddamn rounds, period.
Tyson Fury in that fight was the guy who was actually the one who looked the more in trouble, the more flustered. Francis at no point really looked fazed by anything. But the thing that I kind of was expecting in watching Francis's MMA career is the ultra level violence that, you know, like, and I was trying to describe this to my boxing friends I was watching it with, because they're not really MMA guys, of like, all right, Fury beats you, it's a masterclass. When Francis beats you, you kind of don't want to look because it's so brutal at times. Now, it felt like the genius in what you were able to do with Francis is hold him back a bit and not let the lion, you know, completely go for the kill. Do you think that you'll hold him back a little bit less in this next fight? Because he did seem to have a little bit left in the tank at the end of the Fury fight.
Yeah, you know, and I will take that. Right to the, I'll take that shot to the chin, because in the corner, several of those rounds, I was telling him, composure, calm down, even after knocking him down, because I felt Fury, we know he's durable. It was short time in that round anyway, and we know he could come back from that. He's experienced in those areas. If I had one insecurity in my head, and by the way, I told the world before the fight he was going to knock him down. I told the world he could go 10 and win. I told the world. I wasn't surprised about that, but deep down somewhere in the crevice of my thoughts, I was worried about the gas tank late. So yes, we held Francis back about 15%. And you know, in hindsight, 2020 retrospect, we should have unleashed the hounds. But I was really worried about that going deep, because I know Tyson's durable. He's tricky. And he could play, and if Francis showed any decline or any fatigue, Fury jumps on him, throws a few punches that doesn't even hurt him, and the referee waves it off, and we're all looking crazy. You know what I mean? Based on the decision, if that would have happened, they would have did it. He got elbowed intentionally. Nothing happened. There was a second knockdown in that fight. I seen it in round 7.
When Fury was running towards him and got clipped.
Yeah, he fell. Yeah, he tripped on Francis' foot also, but he fell. And when he went through the ropes, he was right looking at myself and Eric Nixick, his eyes crossed in the back of his head for a minute, and he was stunned a little bit. So seeing this play out, the elbow, the should have been considered a knockdown, at least not being called. Mm-hmm. I didn't want anything weird to happen, because the referee jumps in and waves it off and all is lost. So yeah, you're good. We did hold him back. We told him to be composed. Don't burn too much. All of that. Why? It was his first fight, man. Your first boxing fight ever to fight 10 rounds is a hard task. Now you put the magnitude of whom you're fighting, an undefeated best boxer heavyweight in the world, definitely this generation, also a bit younger than you. Tyson had every advantage. We had every disadvantage. That's why we held them back. To get to your question, though, sorry for rambling on. 3 days, we're not holding them back. 3 days, we're unleashing the chains for sure. Burn the boats. Wakanda forever. African versus African. The best, strongest willed man will win on March 8th. I'm not going to hold them back for sure. And I don't care. I feel the ferocious fist of Francis will stop Joshua, period. And I'm putting it all on the table. I know they wouldn't do it, but we're all in this fight. Francis has the experience of the Tyson Fury fight. He's been 10. There's nowhere in the crevice of my mind he can't do 10. So now I'm not gonna hold the chains and not let that lion go in captivity and destroy whatever he wants to destroy. I can assure you that this time.
What is maybe the most underrated quality about Francis, in your opinion?
The most underrated quality I feel about Francis is his intelligence. Yeah, he's a big old NFL football player if he would have been American. but he's very smart, not just in the fight world and business and economics, philosophy, all of that. He's a very interesting dude, I can tell you that. Yeah. But he's smart. He doesn't just take your word for it. It has to have a theory behind it. It has to be proven. And it has to be something that can be tested and stand correct. So, that's actually a good quality about him. And that's why he develops so quickly when you train him. You show him something, he'll calculate in his mind, he'll do it, he'll do a few variations of it, and then he'll talk about it, he'll do his scientific research, and then he'll be like, yeah, okay, that works, and then we go. And some coaches don't like that. I love it because I want a guy to have full confidence in what we're doing. So I don't care what method you use to simulate the techniques, as long as you're willing to do it or figure out a better way to do it. And I'm down to modify too. You know what I mean? So he's very intelligent. He's very athletic. You know what I mean? And his best quality is probably his kindness. He's actually a sweetheart of a guy, honestly. He just looks big and scary.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree from meeting him myself and knowing people who know him. He is like a sponge, apparently, and very scientific in his approach. And I think that if there's one thing people are underestimating, at least from conversations I'm having, I think that there's this automatic assumption that AJ is the smarter fighter. Obviously, he's got the skills and experience, and we can't dispute that. But I think people underestimate in the fight Francis's ability to read what is the best case scenario to go for here. And in terms of boxing from day one, if Francis had been boxing from day one and, you know, maybe have had the Anthony Joshua life of constant Olympic style training or whatever, where do you think he'd be now?
God, if he started doing boxing, let's say even at a late age in America, let's say if he started at 16, 10 years earlier, he'd be 10 times better and higher than where he is now. Mm-hmm. Right now, his last two fights, he's at intergalactic proportions as far as height. He's higher than Olympic heights. If he started 10 years earlier, he would be the guy you've been in discussion with saying that he's a medalist, Olympic medalist. He's, it would be Tyson Fury, Preston Ngannou, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, Andy Ruiz. He'd be right in the mix of all these top heavyweights in this era, for sure. Because he has the work ethic, he has the genetics, and he's intelligent and athletic enough to pull it off, for sure.
I've heard he's been breaking the punch bags up pretty badly, and you're a historian. I've seen you talk about legendary boxers.
Yeah.
In terms of power, because everyone makes a big deal of Francis' power, and we're all very aware of it. Where do you think his power ranks in all time punchers? You know, we've got Deontay Wilder, for example, recently. Yeah. Do you rate it higher than him?
Yeah. Well, I would say probably yes. Not because any one punch. Deontay Wilder has that lightning right hand, but Francis has a lightning right hand, a lightning left hook, lightning uppercuts either hand. So Francis definitely has more variety of power than Deontay Wilder. Francis can knock you out with any punch, not just the right hand. Any uppercut, left or right lands, he can knock you out with it. Any hook, he can knock you out with it. You know, so when he goes southpaw, he can knock you out with the straight left. When he's conventional, he can knock you out with the straight right. So I can't disrespect Deontay and say that Francis is definitely punching harder than him, even though we have the proof. Go punch the power cube, Deontay. Break Francis' record. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
These things are measured. These are opinions. At this time, Francis has the hardest measured punch, the hardest calculated punch. So you have to say he's the hardest puncher. Don't get me wrong, George Foreman, Ken Norton, Ernie Shavers, these guys could hit super hard. George Foreman split two heavy bags every training camp. Francis split a heavy bag in 3 weeks of being in rehab last camp. So, I mean, that 8-week cap, that would equal two bags, basically. So, I don't know. One thing I can tell you, sir, he hits extremely hard, both fists.
What about yourself? Because obviously you're the one who's holding the pads and, God knows what that does to you. Like, how is it to be on the other side of it physically?
Hey, I'm not here because I'm pretty and charming. You know what I mean? Let me tell you something. Everyone wants to coach Francis until you coach Francis, because it's the pain involved, my friend.
I imagine, man.
Involved. Luckily, I got the background. I fought guys 60, 80 pounds bigger than me. I've been hit by Gary Goodrich, Mighty Moe, Carter Williams, all these type of hard-hitting guys. I'm hurt every single day, but I'm just barely tough enough to take it, recover, and be ready the next day, enthusiastic as ever.
I heard that the sparring partners you brought in have had like good records, been quite high level. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
We understand how serious of a fight this is. We understand the threat of Anthony Joshua. We brought nothing but strong fighters to this camp. All of them can fight. Many of them are undefeated. And our entire camp combined, there's only one loss out of all the fights we had combined. I've been in boxing a long time. I won my first boxing world championship in 2002. I know how guys do. You bring one tough one in, you bring one medium one in, and you bring a sucker that you put in at the last, and the guy beats up on normally.
Yeah.
If you combine these guys' records, it'll probably be like a 60 percentile, maybe 70 percentile win record. We got damn near 50 fights combined with only one loss. We're not playing this camp because we understand one thing, that this is a real challenge and that Anthony Joshua is a dangerous opponent because he poses a lot of the things that Francis poses, size, athletic ability, and good old-fashioned power.
You know, from the Fury fight, do you think that there's certain things that he has taken that will benefit him?
He's definitely taken a lot from this fight, from the Fury fight. You get 10 rounds to fight one of the most complex heavyweight puzzles of this era. Because one thing about Tyson Fury, he's a highly dimensioned fighter, meaning he can fight many styles. He can box, brawl, crowd you, dirty box you. He gained so much in 30 minutes, 10 rounds of fighting him. So many things that he could computate and use in this fight. Why? Because Joshua is a simpler matrix to solve. But simpler doesn't mean easier because he's not an easier fight. I feel he's a harder fight because of that power he possesses.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has some weapons that Fury didn't have. I didn't view Fury as a one-punch knockout artist coming into this fight. Joshua has 27 wins with 24 stoppages. He can scorch you with a nice right hand. So there's a lot of dangers in this fight, more dangers in this fight. But I feel the skill and the knowledge and the information that Francis gathered fighting Tyson Fury will be golden, even more than the training we've done, will be golden in a matchup in this fight, especially the halfway point going down the stretch.
This is going to be the first time where Anthony Joshua is looking across the ring and looking at a man and thinking, you're bigger and stronger and hit harder than me. This might be like, and I think that we're going to really find out the skill level of Anthony Joshua in this, like, because in theory, he should have all the technique and skill to get by Francis, but it feels like you're very confident in Francis's ability and his power to outman him.
Well, I'm very confident in Francis' skills also, and more so than the Tyson Fury fight, I'm very confident in his stamina to do a strong 10.
Mm.
That's going to be vital in this fight.
Do you feel like the game plan of AJ is quite obvious? Yeah, like in that, you know, the way he fought Andy Ruiz, keep it long, you know. Exactly, the second time. Yeah, keep the hell away from the power, keep on your bike, kind of like what Fury resorted to at the end of the last fight, right? Like, just stay the hell away from this guy.
No.
Do you think he will try and be more aggressive than that, or do you expect him to be quite similar?
I'm going to give him a game plan right now. I'm going to spit this game. I'm going to give this game plan exactly what Anthony Joshua is going to do. Mm. Exactly what he's going to do. He's carrying the cross right now. He's carrying the cross. You know what I mean? He has to outdo what Fury did. Okay? He's going to come out and try to, you know, step forward, take the center, and move Francis back. He's going to try to show to the UK and the world that I'm the bigger, better, stronger, better guy. But at some point, he's going to realize that's not going to work, and he'll go Anthony Ruiz too, for sure. But he's definitely going to come out and try to impose his will and you know, show he got a huge pair. But he'll resort to boxing. And remember, if that's what it takes to win, that's what he should do. All I focus on and all I know, whatever way he try to modify this fight, whatever route he goes, Francis is prepared to fight a guy coming forward. He's prepared to fight a guy on the stick and move, Muhammad Ali tactic. He's prepared to fight a guy who wants the dirty box. That's why we had real sparring partners with real talent and real good skills to help push Francis back to the days when he was in third, fourth, fifth grade digging dirt. He's not digging that sand. He's digging that sand. Remember this motion, because you're going to see that shit in 3 days. And Joshua, are you ready for what you have coming for you? And it's crazy how life works. Now we see ourselves I'm coaching a fighter who's facing off with a guy who I actually enjoy watching fight.
Yeah, I interviewed a boxer called Joe Egan recently. He's friends with Mike Tyson, and he said, you have to admire your opponent to properly prepare for them, to give them that respect.
I don't believe in that. Definitely not. And not just him. I don't believe in that. I believe maybe the coaches should have slight admiration for a person.
Exactly.
Say right now, I shouldn't be giving this free game up, but I'm going to give it to you. There's no way you should admire someone you're fighting. Because if you admire the person you're fighting, you're going to give them too much credit and what they're doing. No, you don't admire them. You're the opposite of that. You kind of disrespect them in your mind. Because if admiration is what makes you train hard to fight someone, you're not passionate about what you do. Your training starts within you. The way you push yourself always is internal. The media talking shit, the fans talking shit, those are slight motivations. But the pure core of your passion should be what fuels you to do whatever you do. It fueled you your career. It's fueled you to do this podcast. It's fueling me to train people and have enthusiasm with every fighter I got. Was there amateur on the hyper level of Francis? I'm not doing this because I admire like Freddie Roach or whoever the trainer of the year is right now. That's the wrong way to look at it. I totally disagree with that, especially when you're getting in that square circle to compete. I can admire Joshua because I'm not getting punched by him. I'm not fighting him. But if you're fighting someone, I think that's a bad way to look at it because it's going to make you give them too much credit. And when that night goes wrong for you, you're going to start saying, man, I knew it. Versus no, I'm not accepting this. If I admire you and you start beating me, man, at some point my mind's gonna say, damn, I knew he was the better man. No, sir. I don't agree with that. But to each his own, you know, tomato, tomato, we say squirrel, you guys say however you say the word squirrel, I don't know. Squirrel, whatever it is. But I disagree with that 100%. Sorry for being so crazy about that.
I love it.
Crazy to me.
I love it, mate. I want the real stuff, mate, and you're giving that 100%. And what you're saying, actually, it sort of reminds me of Otto Wallen, like, because when Francis Ngannou's in that face-off and he's looking at Anthony Joshua going, I'm coming for you with everything I've got from the pit of my stomach, Otto Wallen didn't do that. He didn't get anything off. And a lot of people are basing the newfound confidence in Anthony Joshua on that fight. Yes. Can you tell me what you made of it?
Man, exactly like you said, you were good, sir. I've been saying this since after that fight. Sometimes reality does strike and it bites very viciously. Meaning, if you and I were to fight twice in the amateurs or whatever, and you beat me both times, okay, I can live with that. But then you have a big fight coming up and you say, hey, Dewey, I need you to come spar with me to get me ready for this fight. I'm like, cool, I'll spar with you. And we spar, let's say, 5-6 weeks, twice a week. Maybe even 3 times a week. And you beat me every damn sparring session. Twice a week times 5, that's 6 sessions we've had, you beat me every session. Okay, it's only sparring. Don't matter that much, right? Then you call me for another camp, and the same things happen. So you beat me twice in the amateurs. You beat me like 10 times in sparring sessions. And now all of a sudden, Saudi Arabia pops off crazy in this sport, makes boxing exciting again. And I get the opportunity to make money to fight you. Am I going to take it? Absolutely, I'm going to take it. Because I'm a fighter. I'm willing to fight anyone. But you've beat me like 12 to 20 times already. I'm going to look at you with that stare down with a real look. Because I did train and I plan on beating you. But the moment it goes wrong, what's going to happen? I know it, man. Damn. He's the better man. And not just you. Who else? The coach is in your corner. The guys who was in your corner when you beat me up 10 times in a row seeing me getting beat up. So when I get hit with a hard shot, well, I'm not even really hurt. You see shots like this land in heavyweight boxing all the time. And yeah, you break my nose, but I fought with a broken nose. Many fighters fight with a broken nose, man. This is boxing. Your nose most likely will be broken. For the corner just to wave it off when you still have a fighting chance, that's a declaration of everyone knowing what it is. And not saying the fight was thrown. No, you go in there with the passion to win, but reality strikes and it bites viciously. And that's what I see in that fight. Reverse side real quick. The opposition. You beat me 10 times. You're real comfortable fighting me again. And that's what I see. Joshua was cooler than a ceiling fan. He was comfortable. He was the best I ever seen him. No stress, just express, dusted off his shoulder, whatever cool term you want to use. That was Joshua that night. He won't be that fucking relaxed in 3 days. I can tell you that.
Damn straight. It's because a lot of people are using that fight as the reason behind AJ is the best he's ever been. And I'm like, mate, of course he was. There was nothing coming back at him, you know? Like, you know, if even...
Don't underestimate the familiar foe.
Yes.
A familiar foe. There's no nervous energy. There's no uncertainty with a guy you didn't beat up before more than once.
In the other wins he had prior to that, there was the trepidation, there was the hesitation, and a lot of people are overwriting that as if he's over that now. And that's where there's a huge element of doubt for me of like, when you've got Francis Ngannou throwing hands in front of you, there will be hesitation because you showed it against Hellenius.
Yes.
So, and if Francis smells that fear in the ring, it's a bad night for anyone, in my opinion. So obviously with your extensive MMA knowledge, you're aware of like a lot of these, good level strikers. I was wondering if you had to pick someone maybe out of the UFC to go into a boxing ring and do well in any weight class, who would you suggest could be the next Francis Ngannou from MMA?
I'll say I don't see any top MMA guy doing what Francis did. I do like Emporia, whatever his name is, the guy who evoked.
The featherweight,
Sorry, let me put some respect to his name. He's a champion, first one for Spain, big shots. I would give him a chance because he has a strong boxing style against some of the champions. But to fight the top guy, the top boxer, I don't see anyone in MMA doing it.
Now, I'm not sure if you've ever addressed this before, but when I was searching your name on YouTube, Sean Strickland's name comes up and he's having a, like he does with everyone, he's talking shit, and that's Sean Strickland. But I wondered if you'd ever talked about his comments about you being a TikTok coach, because now you're coaching a guy who is as legit as it gets. So I'm like, well, how can you be saying this? So have you ever addressed that?
I'll tell you, that happened back when Marvin Vettori fought Cannonier. Marvin came to Vegas and he decided to train with me. Sean wanted them obviously to train with him and Eric Nixick and everybody. Remember, Eric Nixick and I are partners, but we do have separate entities. Sometimes I do train guys at Couture's. I was the guy who was asking Press to go to Couture's to do his wrestling years ago, before he ever went to Couture's, back when Robert Foss was still alive. So Sean, we ended up losing the fight to, Marvin Vettori ended up losing the fight to Cannonier, and Sean goes on a charade about, oh, he's training with fake people, this and that. The thing is, Sean doesn't realize a few coaches at his gym I coach. Eddie Baracco, I was Eddie Baracco's coach his professional career. D1, Danny, I helped him many times in his career. I even held pass for Randy Couture when he first came to Vegas. I trained Jay Haran originally, Phil Baroni. War Machine. You know, I trained these type of guys, man. I did the ring walk in the UFC with Baroni when he fought Pete Sells way back, probably before Sean Strickland even started. So Sean was talking out of emotions. He was upset that Cannonier ended up winning a crazy fight against Vettori, and he shipped the blame on me. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose in MMA. It was a great fight, and it just happened the way it happened. Yeah. So he says, I'm a TikTok coach. I'm a TikTok coach, right? I got 10 world titles I won as a head coach. Three of those titles were underdogs. 2022, I went to Liverpool. Jamie Miracle Mitchell took Shannon Courtenay's belt. That's recent times. I trained Jesse Vargas. First knockout in 6 years. We fought Saddam Ali. 4-1 underdog. Saddam Ali was an Olympian, undefeated at the time. Jesse stopped him in 9 rounds. Then we fought Pacquiao. Went 12 rounds with an icon like Pacquiao. Bebu Shumanov, the first champion of Kazakhstan, not Triple G. Bebu won the belt before Triple G. Guess who was his coach? Me. 3 title defenses. We lost the belt to Benora Hopkins. Amir Abdallah, who now is the manager of Caleb Plant, Badu Jack, guys like this, who was Amir's coach, me. We won a world title in kickboxing.
Yeah.
Francis Ngannou. I've been with Francis way longer than what Sean thinks. I was there before anyone at Couture was there with Francis. He won the UFC title. And then Christine Fiera, the misfit, I trained her when she won a bare knuckle world title. That's 10 world titles I won as a coach. I won my first world title as a coach in 2002. That's over 20 years, but I'm the one on TikTok. For information, I post a lot on Instagram. I don't even get on TikTok. You know what I mean? And I my fighters created my Instagram account, Jimmy Spacuzza and Raquel Paul Louie. So people that know me know, and that's all I care about. Blessed the Sean. He's an outspoken guy. He's funny. He's comical. His words mean nothing to me. Don't ever let someone's words identify within you. You know who you are, and be strong in that, and be indicted on how you feel about yourself, and the rest doesn't matter.
In terms of how you actually see this fight going, how you picture it in your mind, roughly, without giving away your basic tactics, obviously, how do you envisage Francis Ngannou winning this fight?
Well, in a perfect world, we knock him out in the first round and we celebrate. but no, I know it's stiff competition. I see Francis just persevering, being dominant, and really showing the world how talented he is. It doesn't necessarily have to be just by brute force like everyone thinks. It could be speed and power. It could be finesse and finishing. And that's what I expect. And more importantly, that's what he expects from himself. And that's the most important part. I could say, oh, he's going to win, blah, 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 but he feels he's going to win. And that's the most powerful thing in the world.
Yeah, if it feels like one of the best assets Francis has in coming into this is his lack of fear. You know, I think we've seen how fear can control fighters. Obviously, AJ himself has struggled with it at times. But when he was trading with Tyson Fury, you know, as we said with Wallen, he never did that. And most people, they have so much or too much respect for Anthony Joshua. Like, Francis's ability to go into the fire and trade, I think, will pay well for him in this fight. Like, I'll give him the best possible chance.
This fight is going to be feast or famine, either guy, straight up. Straight up. I mean, that's how I see it. It's going to be feast or famine. Someone's going to go down. The fight is not going 10 rounds, man. And I feel when it comes down to all of that, the strong will, the hard life, the stepping off that cliff of life and crashing down, leaving this country on foot, and being jailed and thrown in the desert to die of starvation or dehydration, all will come to be deep ingredients within Francis that makes him refuse to say no. And somehow, anyway, win this fight. Not to be over dramatic, but I just feel like it's going to just come down to the best man. I just feel like through his life's work, through the human element, Francis will be the better man.
It's funny because people undersell that. And yet when we talk about Muhammad Ali, we talk about what made him great outside the ring and inside the ring. But apart, like, and then when it comes to modern day fights, we sort of don't take that into account. It's all technicalities, X's and O's. But I feel like Francis has that X factor, that special thing about him. And when you're in his presence, you really are aware that you're in around someone who's a special dude. And in terms of legacy, just to finish off, what do you think Francis's legacy in fighting and in life will be?
Well, it'll definitely be a triumphant story. But just remember, like, the reason why people discount those elements that they gave Ali was because technology has erased all of that. Things are so easy for us. No one's digging dirt in elementary school to pay for their school supplies. Mama and daddy buying that. Plus, you're getting bussed or driven to school. You don't have to walk 5 miles like our parents did through rain, sleet, or snow. Mm-hmm. So technology has made things easier. So we discount people who come from small villages and come from areas where the technology is not as great as we have. And we put them in our category. Francis is not in our category. He's not from the UK. He's not American. He's African from a small area. And he had a hard life. He had the lives our grandparents had. And we know how tough they were back then. He's Jack Dempsey tough. He's old school tough. And all that stuff might be the leading factor that pushes him to be victorious, man. It's going to be crazy. 3 days away. I know what we're gonna do. And no matter what, I'm gonna have this sleeve up like this, you know, because the string guard is right there on my arm. That's why I put the sleeve up. Not because I'm trying to flex my bicep. The number one in the air. Why? Because I feel we're the best in the world. I feel he the best in the world. And we're going to prove that March 8th.
That was an unbelievably passionate interview, mate. I really appreciate the time from Dewey Cooper, the coach of Francis Ngannou. And, you know, as you say, you train a lot of different fighters. And people can follow your story yourself on your social medias. We'll put the links in below. Thanks so much, mate. I really appreciate that.
Thank you. 30 seconds. My shirt, Team Combat League, Season 2 starts. Guys, we have the most exciting professional boxing format ever in the history of the sport. 24 fighters per team fighting one round each. Every round's a championship round. After 24 rounds, every round's a different fight. The team with the most points win. Team Combat League YouTube channel or teamcombatleague.com for more info. I'm the president of this great company. Season 2 starts 3 weeks after Francis fights Joshua. That's March 28th. Please check out Team Combat League.
Awesome. Thanks very much, mate. Appreciate it.
Right.
That was Dewey Cooper on the True Jody podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Cheers.